Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino is back. We're ready to talk about some more about Survivor Ghost Island. We had our big panel on Wednesday at night. Myself, Leona Boris, Phil T got together and talked all about the 32nd best season of Survivor. We got to some of your questions. We will get to many more of them today with one of the greatest guys around. Of course, he is the author of many a RHAP theme song, and also the composer behind the song of the summer, It's Karate Time. Please welcome the great Will from America.
Yeah, Ghost Island, baby.
Yes, yes. What a treat. What a treat. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the spookiest season with one of the spookiest guys around me.
Yes. Will, so excited to have you here. I just want to give a heads up that normally that this is a patron-only show. We had such a good get in Will from America, start of a new month. Sometimes I like to give a little peek behind the curtain of here's what's going on in our patron podcast feed. We dropped one hell of a patron 5 for 5 on people this morning. Already, I saw multiple moments for the best of the year show from last night's patron 5 for 5. We also have patron activities on the regular every week tonight that we'll be bringing back Patron Taskmaster with Grace Leader. So it's going to be a very busy patron weekend as per usual. Robswebsite.com/patron. But Will, how are you?
I'm doing well, Rob. Enjoying the new house. I bought a house a few months ago.
Yes. Well, don't remind me of this fact that a lot of people think we're close in age, but it's actually not that true.
And actually closer than you'd think.
Yeah, and you'll get a homeowner and me a renter.
Well, you do live in California, yes. In Los Angeles. Much more expensive homes there, mm-hmm. I'd imagine, mm-hmm. than in, over here in Richmond.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I should move in and be a neighbor.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah,
I mean, like, everyone in this neighborhood is already a boomer, so I think it'd fit in pretty well.
Okay, sounds perfect. All right, Will, what's been going on with you?
Not much, honestly. I've been writing songs for people.
You've turned this theme song writing into like a whole like a side hustle, or is it a full time hustle?
No, it's a side hustle for sure. It's not very lucrative, but it's slightly lucrative. I've at my website, willfromamerica.com. You can request a song written for a loved one or for yourself, for your podcast, for your dog.
Yeah.
I've been doing a lot of writing for like people's anniversaries or birthdays, and it's a fun time.
Yeah. Will, I don't want to put you on the spot, but we're here. If you were going to write a song about Survivor Ghost Island, where would you start?
I mean, I think I'd start with like creating an appropriate vibe, right? Like the season's all about past mistakes coming back to haunt you, and I think it'd probably be kind of a breakup song.
Yeah, you feel like that Ghost Island is about the breakup, because ironically, it's about a couple that never broke up.
That's true. But, then Final Tribal Council is like their first big fight where they're like just going at each other. And, mm-hmm. I feel like that segues nicely into like one point that I don't feel like you guys really touched on in the podcast. I feel like at the Final Tribal, I remember both Dom and Wendell putting up a lot more of a fight, but it felt like they were both just being so defensive towards the other person that I wasn't really impressed by either Final Tribal performance.
Well, it's funny because that the nice thing about going through these seasons is sometimes, like, especially the recent ones, like, I've heard from a lot of the people that we've talked about where, I think that some people are going back and listening to, like, these, like, oh, I haven't thought about my season in a couple of years, but somebody just did a whole podcast about it. So, I've gotten some texts from Dom Abate, and he told me that he is going back and because there was, like, talk about, like, were Wendell and Dominic better or worse than Steven and JT? And he said he never had seen that season, so he wanted to go back and start watching it. But in that tribal council, like, JT goes full like heel turn and throws Steven so hard under the bus that Steven is like gobsmacked. Like, what? No. What? Why are you saying that about me? Yeah. And we don't get that from Dom and Wendell.
It kind of felt like they were both trying to, I guess, like sort of be civil. I mean, Wendell's calling himself the mastermind. Mm-hmm. Whereas Dominic is, you know, like, there is no mastermind. Like, it was a team effort. I thought it was interesting to see them have to come to terms with the fact they finally, you know, can't just be, like, on the same side anymore.
Yeah. Well, before we go too far down into Ghost Island, I would just love to know that what is your particular attachment to this season? Why did you want to come here that you could have been here on any season? Why Ghost Island?
So I was drawn to Ghost Island because it's like a recent enough season that it's like kind of fresh in my memory, but mm-hmm. not long enough ago that I feel like it's been talked to death. You know, like there you haven't been into the TOS chapter of yeah. Ghost Island, for example. So I feel like the history books haven't really been written on it, and I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to be a part of that.
Yeah.
In my memory, Ghost Island was a lot worse than I remembered. No, it was a lot better.
Same.
It was a lot worse in my memory yes. than it was on this rewatch. So I totally agreed with you and Phil and Liana on the main podcast. I think that on a binge, when you're not doing like seven podcasts a week, like, hey, is someone going to make a move? What's Laurel doing? It's a lot more enjoyable when you can just like enjoy the story as it's developing, even though it is like a fairly clear and mm-hmm. somewhat predictable story. I think the same can be said of a lot of early seasons of the show. And I think like modern Survivor, we are very harsh on it for its like any sort of predictability, right? Like yeah. I think we remember the older seasons differently before like, we all grew accustomed to the editing styles of the show. Like, you know, Australia, Africa.
Yeah.
Another early season.
Vanuatu, yeah.
Yeah, Vanuatu. Like, they're far from coming up. Palau, I mean, Palau mm-hmm. is just like, da, 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 da. They're far from coming up, I imagine. And that's, I think, because we don't judge them as harshly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when they came out, like, people weren't... accustomed to the editing style of the show.
Yeah, not to go like too far down like the meta conversation, but what do you think that is? Do you think it's that because like was it that we are looking at it too much? Like we're just like we're over inspecting it, and we're so like we're throwing away like perfectly good orange because it has a bruise on it or something like that. Or do you think it's that a season like Kagyan kind of ruined us, where it's like there's twists and turns every single week, and where that in Ghost Island there were not big twists and turns, but it still was an interesting story.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there wasn't a boring episode to me. I know, trying not to go on another tangent. I think it's sort of a mix of both things. I think like when the first like 16 to 20, mm-hmm. I'd say like around Heroes versus Villains is where people started really like getting into the show like online. Obviously there was that beforehand, but not like to the same level as it is now. I think in the early seasons of the show, people were just kind of watching week to week and then mm-hmm. figuring out what happened and then not thinking about it as much in the week.
Yeah. And
the weeks between each episode.
I will add to that. And like, I know you are well versed in like the Survivor sucks of it all. And I feel like that there was a lot of discussion, I feel like, online, but it didn't really center around strategy. And then I feel like mm-hmm. that around the time that like podcasting started to be a thing, I do feel like that the discourse shifted to a lot more talk about the strategy. Like I feel like that a lot of the talk in the early seasons would be about people's physical appearance and the like, and that was like what the message yeah. boards were like. I lived through it. I went on that website 9 million times a day, in between, 2002 and 2004. And, you know, I feel like that's the kind of stuff that, like, I don't feel like that there was like a real dissection too often that was like a lot of engagement around like this move at this. And again, the game has also gotten faster, but I feel like that we're so hyper-focused on the game also.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of that is due to the show shifting itself being towards more about the game. Like, I just started showing my girlfriend Borneo for the first time. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you know, the show is so different. Like, it's barely even a game at all. And I think for the first several seasons, like, people didn't even see it as much of a game as like a, you know, a social experiment, right? But now, like, with all the idols, all the twists, it's kind of like you just expect something to be shaken up every episode.
Right. Where it's like, I think that we had seasons where like that those shakeups weren't happening, and I think that they kind of felt like, well, okay, well, let's like pump that stuff in there, where so maybe like the game dynamics aren't shifting, but basically what if we put enough toys out there that anybody could go home any given week? That would be, you know, twists and turns. Like, that would keep people on the edge of their seat, even if the tide isn't turning between one side to the other side, and all of these like power switches will just sort of like almost randomly take people out.
Yeah, but I still think, like, with the best seasons, like the Kageyans of the world, the real natural shifts that come with Tony going back and forth, like, that aren't super dependent on the idols, are the create much better TV, because it's not just like out of nowhere. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, someone, oh, for sure.
Roulette wheel just like send someone home.
Certainly. Yeah. Yeah, so, but they're like just trying to like manufacture it in some ways. And, you know, and I think that we see that here in this season, where they try to pump like a lot of stuff into the game, and they have almost like a mechanism where, I mean, you could complain about like where in the previous season, Ben kept finding the idol towards the end of the game. I mean, we really have at this point like a bag where, you know, you stick your hand in half the time and randomly somebody is going to Ghost Island. It just so happened that more often than not, like when these like random people went to Ghost Island, there was no game for them to play.
And honestly, I've seen a lot of people complaining about that. Like, oh, this episode didn't even have a game. I prefer that to giving out like a super powerful advantage every round. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's pretty much what we saw with like Island of the Idols, with the Island of the Idols in that season. Mm-hmm. And I think I preferred this much better.
I would have preferred if we had a wheel and you spin the wheel, game or no game. Like, I don't like it that production gets to decide which round we're playing a game, which round we're not playing the game.
I think at least if you're going to make it like, if you're trying to inject like true randomness into it, like with the rock draw, I like the wheel idea. I don't know if the aesthetics really fit Survivor as well. Mm-hmm. As much as like,
it's, you know, no flipping a coin. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So, Will, we had a great talk on Wednesday night. I would love to hear from you. Like, what are some of the things you felt like that we didn't get into as much?
Let me see. Open up my notes app. A lot of it was about like the, you know, just like recency bias in terms of recent seasons getting like more hate because people talk about them to death and like end up finding things to dislike rather than just like watching the show and not thinking about it.
Yeah. I also wonder, like, did the pandemic change us at all? And this is, you know, like a real question. Like, are we appreciating some of these things going back and watching them because like we don't have
just, like,
Survivor,
seeing people like without masks on?
I mean, that's nice to see, but like we sort of like are we remembering this era fondly because it was so different than the era that we live in now?
I think that's definitely a part of it. It's just kind of like, hey, remember when we were all, you know, going to Live Know It Alls in Boston and. Mm-hmm. Riding Ubers with James Lim.
Yeah.
That was just me.
I don't know. My question is, as I've gone through these series and I'm sort of like remembering some of these seasons that people have panned in like in a better light, like I'm wondering, is there anything, and this is sort of like the essential question I feel like that you ask yourself when you're on Survivor, of like, oh, I have an appreciation for this thing that I wasn't appreciating in my real life. I'm going to be like this all the time now. I'm never I'm never not going to appreciate a waffle when I'm home again. Every day I'm going to but do you think that we can take anything from this rewatch into Survivor 41 is on, God willing, life is somewhat normal again. Do you think that we'll be like, "Oh, complain, this sucks."
I think we just need to take in. I feel like I'm going to say something I don't think anyone's ever said before, Rob. Twitter, too negative.
Too negative, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's just like, I feel like a lot of people watch the show kind of rooting for a certain outcome. But I think the best way to watch the show is to just kind of like take it in and, you know, don't watch it like it's a sport. Just watch it like it's any other story being told.
Oh, yeah. And I watch sports and that's terrible also.
Yeah, that's also a terrible way to watch
it's
sports.
It's miserable.
Depends. I guess it depends on your team, but
yeah, yeah. One person is happy at the end of sports.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Like most sports end with everybody unhappy. So I guess the Survivor is a lot like that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, anything else you want to hit up front before we go and revisit the questions?
Yeah, I also just wanted to talk about like one of the reasons I wanted to talk about the season two is because I just love like the whole ridiculousness of random Survivor artifacts being buried on this other island, but they all have like different powers now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no logic to whether something is like gained power, whether it lost power. Like whose idol did Chris Noble have that like was
JT.
A real idol? Yeah,
yeah.
Like JT's idol.
It was a real idol.
Power, so it only works for one tribal.
And JT buried it here, but somebody went and found it?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if that was his real idol, if he like told production where it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would like to know.
Yeah. It should have been like, why wasn't it like, this is the letter. Oh, I guess Russell threw it in the fire. But it should have been like, oh, this is the letter that Russell sent, JT sent to Russell. Like it is mature.
Send it to someone and send the one idol.
Yeah. I wonder,
been a good callback.
Was Survivor 2, like sort of like close-minded about the objects that they like they didn't call me and ask me like for the magic eight ball or anything like that?
Yeah,
like
I think so. All of Butch's wood that burned down your shelter.
I wonder,
that's a
Will,
cursed item.
Now that we're talking it through, like do you feel like that did they just not have enough props to be able to do this? Because they I guess and I think the story is Matt Van Wagenen took the stick out of the fire, like he kept it. Somebody must have grabbed James's idol from China, but everything else is from, you know, they asked Andrea for her immunity idol back, but everything else was like from the 30s. Like everything else was like, yeah, it's in the trunk from Fiji.
I think there was like too much of an emphasis put on like having the actual artifact itself. Like, I don't think anyone would have really cared if it was like, this isn't actually JT's letter, but it's like a, you know, a photocopy.
Mm-hmm.
It's also cursed.
Yeah. This is Janet's granola bar.
Yeah. This is Kel's beef jerky.
Yeah. I mean, they could have gone to luxury items. Like, this is the Super Bowl 2000 that that Sean Kniff used back in Borneo. It's back now.
Like, even make the reward items, like, cursed.
Cursed like, reward
been,
items.
That would have been amazing. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, like you win like a cursed item. Your drive.
Yeah. These are the burritos that Dr. Allison ate. That gave that didn't happen yet. But
it's the meat that Joe Del Campo.
Yes. Yes. This is the taco overload platter that Wes Nail had back in San Juan del Sur.
Yeah, chicken nuggets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that would have been fun, I think, if we would have gone a little bit like more broad in terms of like the actual objects that they brought back. Because even like when we're watching stuff, it's like in Survivor Game Changers, like come on, like this is a year ago
two
at this
seasons
point,
ago,
like
they just saw this season.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
It's not ancient history. Also,
yeah.
Like Michaela's steal a vote turning into a double vote. Like why not just use Steven's extra vote that was also cursed and throw more shade on Steven?
It would have been good. I just
two opportunities.
It seems like sometimes they didn't collect the prop.
Yeah, I guess that's all it was.
Yeah, I guess sometimes like do we have Stevens? We threw them all out that day.
No.
So
yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
Um, No, I think I just wanted to all touch right,
let's,
as well.
Let's get into the feedback questions, of course.
Okay, yeah, sure.
And then, of course, like we sent these to Will ahead of time. I always like to share them with the guests so we can get a sense of what they want to talk about. I did look at my good list and bad list. I got some feedback of, Rob, why didn't you read the good list and bad list? Well, I wanted to go through it. I didn't want to miss anything. I will say that Ghost Island had a very ugly immunity necklace.
My God, this is something I had in my notes as well. It looked like a third grader like drew a skull on like white printer paper.
What were they going for?
I don't know.
It was parchment. It
had like trees as like the cheekbones of the skull.
Yeah,
it was very strange. Yeah.
Talk about one bad decision could haunt you forever, art department. Yeah. I don't know what you were thinking, and also, but the tribal council was cool. That it was like sort of like you were like walking into like a skull. That art decoration was really nice. Ghost Island was nice. I saw the Amazon immunity idol. Never thought I would see that again.
I would not have recognized that.
It looks like a teddy bear. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. That's what. That's
I'll have to go back and I'll have to go back and watch.
That's what it looks like. So, you know, some hits and misses from the art department over in Survivor Ghost Island. All right. Let's see. How about, Kevin K had a question that you wanted to talk about. How on earth can you have a season all about cursed items and not have a car reward?
Yeah, I think the budget just must be lower at this point in Survivor history, but it's the classic Survivor curse.
Yeah. So
I don't get it.
So that is not like a budget issue because it's really somebody is paying to have the car in the show. The issue is Survivor does not have the ratings to warrant like a Ford or another car company to say, hey, we want to pay $500,000 to have you one of your contestants win our car on your show, and then also like get the like send the car on a barge to go to Fiji and like have all those like it does not move the needle. You're not selling, Ford trucks because it was on Survivor.
Now that I think about it, it's probably not great marketing to be like, oh, this Ford Camaro was cursed 20 years ago when Cindy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but you're saying, okay, so maybe they could like go like sort of like a Price is Right. I think Price is Right is also like promotional consideration. But, you know, if the reward was a car and they didn't necessarily do it as like product placement, but they actually the famous Survivor car curse is back this season. That would have been a fun way to go.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Or just like sell like an old, I mean, like I'd even be excited to win like a, I don't know, a 2004, like a Toyota Acura, just like whatever they gave away in All Stars or like Vanuatu, just give it away again. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they have enough of the budget for that.
Yeah. This is a 2005 Pontiac Torrent, the same car that Cindy Hall took instead of giving her tribe all their own cars that caused her to go on a cursed trip to California with some guy, as told on the Talking with T-Bird podcast.
Good plug.
That was a wild one. Did you listen to that one?
Yeah, that was very wild.
Yeah, like when she like had so many stories. I thought she was coming on to tell like one terrible story about something that happened to her. She was like, so many. It was like a hat on a hat on a hat.
Yeah,
it's like, oh my god, Cindy, how many cursed stories do you have? A lot. Okay. Tonster says, was there anything that you would have liked to have seen that didn't appear from Ghost Island? Of course, that they mention the car curse. Is there anything else?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of discussed this one. I definitely Steven's extra vote. I mean, that's like one of the classic misplayed items. That's a lot of like the early season things, like the Clarence's can of beans.
What would they have? Like that? Was it be like the empty can or the full can?
No, it's the full can still.
Yeah.
They'd probably be tough to get that item though.
Yeah.
It's probably been eaten by now.
So I really feel like that we stumbled on something with the JT, like whether it's the idol that JT sent to Russell or the letter. I think that, you know, and Russell like threw the letter in the fire, but like JT in Survivor Heroes versus Villains, JT found an idol and made the mistake of sending it to Russell, like in a challenge. Russell then gave the idol to Parvati and knocked JT out of the game. Like, forget JT's idol from Game Changers. You had it right there. Nobody remembers JT was even on Game Changers.
Yeah, I didn't even remember until I did this rewatch. I was like, oh yeah, he played it three times.
Yeah.
I think there's like some other classic Survivor mistakes though that would be, I feel like you could try and find a way to reincorporate them, like Colby taking Tina to the final two, like they kind of threw in there with the final tribal voting urn. And I did like that, by the way. I remember thinking it was really dumb on my first watch, but I think it was a good callback to have like the historic voting urns mm-hmm. for Final Tribal Council.
Yeah.
Maybe like the, I don't know, the idol, like from the Hands on a Heart idol in like the very first season of Survivor.
Mm-hmm. Who was it like cursed for?
Relic. I don't know. Cause I guess Kelly would have lost like either way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Kelly won the immunity. Like it wasn't like she gave up or anything like that.
Yeah. It's probably cursed for Rudy. Took his hand off.
Yeah.
Would have won.
Oh.
The first Survivor winner. Imagine that world.
Yeah, it would be wild. Maybe the oranges that Jeff Probst tried to tempt them off with. These are the cursed oranges that caused Richard Hatch.
On shelf?
Yeah. Cursed props from the shelf.
That was very
Maybe the Medallion of Power. This is the Medallion of Power. That would have been great for the Medallion of Power to come back.
True. That would have been the only season where I think it would have made sense.
The Espada older tribe got it first, and they went on to lose a bunch of challenges. But now it's matured into a thing that also gives you an advantage in the team challenges.
If we just have a season where we bring back all of production's worst decisions, all of their mistakes that haunt them forever,
that'd be fun.
We have the haves and have-nots from Fiji.
Mm-hmm. Bring back that if you vote and it's a tie, then you go immediately to rocks.
No, if you vote and it's a tie, it's like a quiz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, well, speaking of rocks,
like
with Lex and back in Survivor Africa. Yeah. You have like all the people that went out of the game on a rock draw. Like, I feel like mm-hmm. this is the white rock that Jessica Lewis pulled, or Tina's daughter. Yeah. Or Pascal, or the purple rock. You know, you have like just paint a rock purple.
Yeah.
It's
the rock.
It wasn't the real rock. It wasn't the real one.
Who would know? Who would know?
Yeah.
Somebody's, it's a rock.
Somebody's like, it's a fake. That's a fake purple rock. All right. Felipe has a question. Can you settle this debate? Felipe says, how overrated is Michael Yerger as a player? He never got himself in good graces with anyone besides his original tribe. I think people overrate him because he's hot and had one interesting move with the James idol and that other super fans would have thought of too. But if he looked like Will Wall, why people berating him as high as they do? And Will Wall is sitting here like, what did I do?
Yeah, I know.
Felipe, leave me out of this.
Wow, that's such like a shot from around the bend.
Will Wall is a handsome guy.
Yeah. Justice for all Wills, you know?
Yes.
I do feel like in the moment I was kind of buying into the Michael Yerger hype. I think a lot of it's just like the fact that he's 18 and he's like very well spoken, but he's incredibly boring.
He's very boring.
Very boring.
I will say that he, like, certainly like a good looking guy. And he also like carried himself in a humble way. Also, he wasn't like, he didn't like walk around like, you know, I'm a hot you know what, and yeah. you know, as my island, and everybody knows it. Like, you know, he was, he gave you a couple things where he was like athletic, he had the like never back down at, like he never gave up, all the things that Survivor looks for. Was he that good of a player? Like, he never really seemed to be able to ingratiate himself with the other side, and maybe it was because he was good in the challenges and Navidi was like, hey, we're never going to give him a chance. But he was the piece on the board that Kellen could have used, and I don't think he ever really, like, he could not convince her that he would be on Team Kellen.
Yeah, not really. I mean, he had like the chance at Final 12 too, where like they, I did back and I went back.
Which vote is the Final 12?
So the Libby vote.
Yeah.
Where Michael plays his idol. And so I went back. I don't remember this being talked about too much at the time, but like if the Malolo 5 wanted to, they could have, for not making fart jokes.
Yes, the great Ari Ferrari.
Great Ari Ferrari. If the Malolo 5 wanted to, like the way that Navidi split the votes between Michael and Libby, I think they had like 4 votes on Michael and 3 on Libby. So like they could have made something happen there. And I, like Michael didn't even convince Jenna to vote with him. Like mm-hmm. no one voted with Michael.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, everybody was sort of like fixated on getting him out. He was unable to do anything. I mean, he did like pull off a bluff on Kellen, telling her that he had the idol when they went to that, you know, but you know, he didn't bluff Dominic.
Yeah, he didn't bluff Dominic. I mean, he got it to a tie. So it ultimately, like, kind of was futile.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he ended up, like, and he was part of Malolo. Like, none of them really ended up in good positions, like, with the swaps. That he ended up on, like, the on a bad side of the first swap, and then also, like, on the bad side of the second swap. There was really not much that he could do other than not get voted out when they were going to vote for James Lim. And then, did he serve? And then he helped them win a challenge when Dominic yeah. Threw the other challenge for yeah. Navidi. So he burned the flag. He would have been out before the merge.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
They probably would have brought him back already if they, you know, talk about bad juju. That if Navidi doesn't throw that challenge, Michael Yerger goes out before the merge. It's like, oh man, what could have been? Michael Yerger, does he come back like instead of somebody for like the Edge of Extinction?
I don't think so. I mean, I think like making it a few more rounds, like I think he might have actually gotten himself in a better position to return because he had that idol play at the Final 12. He had the bluff against Kellen. Like, I think that raises his stock more than it otherwise would have been.
I guess so.
I think he just didn't really like fit into the theme of Edge of Extinction.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, just not having any people brought back aside from that.
Okay.
And like you said on the main podcast, I don't feel like he would want to come back.
I don't think so. I feel like he's probably got other stuff going. Honestly, I feel like it's getting harder and harder to get people to do the show. Like, I think the proposition of going to be on Survivor, like, is less and less interesting, I think, for different people with, like, that, you know, what you basically, like, in terms of fame, like, not a lot comes out of it. You know, the money is nice, but it's not like, you know, $1 million is not like, hey, I'm set for life now. It's like, great. Yeah. Like I can retire, someday. But I'm still back at work.
Yeah, you know, nothing to complain about, but
right. You yeah. know, like, it's not like Jeremy is still a firefighter. Like, he's won Survivor. Like, it's not like, okay, I'm like, my entire, you know, family is taken care of for generations. Like, it's nice. But, yeah. And then also, you know, it could also, like, one bad decision can haunt you forever.
Yeah. I mean, like, and that, I feel like there's a lot of people who've been on Survivor and wish they hadn't. I think yeah. their lives are a lot worse.
And not to mention, a lot of the yeah. things that, like, the physical toll that it takes on people and the yeah. mental health toll that it's taken on people. So, you know, I feel like that, you know, you could go on Survivor and have a good run, but I think that's probably, you know, flip that coin in the air of, like, you know, it's a great experience or it's something that you wish you didn't do.
Yeah, spin that wheel.
Spin the wheel. Yeah.
Game for you.
Yeah. So I think Michael Yerger is going to be fine.
Yeah, his life is fine.
His life is fine. I'll be surprised if, like, you know, 5 years later we find out that he's, like, you know, living in the street.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he was... How is he, like, a real estate agent at 18? Don't you need, like, a license? I don't know enough about real estate.
I don't know about this, but I do feel like that, you know... people, you know, maybe like people aren't like questioning his credentials that much. They're like, this guy seems like he's got it all put together.
Yeah, he could have just had like a fake ID.
Yes, I mean, he's telling people he's 24 on Survivor. Maybe he's telling people in real life he's 30.
Yeah, I believe it.
Who knows? All right. And look, seems like a nice enough guy. I don't want to pile on Michael Yerger. There's so many survivors you could pile on. Michael Yerger, to our knowledge, seemingly, you know, fine person.
No hate to him as a person at all.
Yeah. All right. Tubby Lunchbox has an interesting question. If you reverse the boot order for the season, where would this season rank? I think it would rank much higher. I don't know about that, Tubby Lunchbox.
Yeah. I always think that's a fun thought exercise.
It's a fun thought exercise, but all right, tell me about this season where the first boot is Wendell.
Yeah, so Navidi loses the first two tribals, and you know Chris Noble.
Maybe Dom plays the idol at the first tribal council. It's a 5-5, like a 5-5 vote, and they put the votes on Wendell instead of Dominic.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, like, you know, Chris Noble just rallies his troops. He's got Angela. He's got Seabass at that point.
Yeah. Maybe Bradley flips. Like, I'm not going to rocks on day three.
Yeah. Sounds like a Bradley thing to do. Mm-hmm. Got the swap. I think I'd like to see the final tribal council of Stephanie Gonzalez, Jacob Derwin, and Morgan Rickey. I think that would be a very, very heated debate.
Yes, yes.
What does Jacob Derwin do at Final Tribal?
Oh, that only puts on the greatest Tribal Council performance of all time. Like, you think he's going to have, like, props and stuff like that? Yeah. Like, I mean, he's a showman.
He writes a song.
He's a showman. And I really do think that Stephanie Gonzalez could have done something.
I think so. I was really... she was my winner pick this season. And I was very disappointed to see her go out with like barely any explanation. I mean, you guys talked about it, but like it seemed like they just all really were not planning on any contingency other than just voting out Jacob.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was just like they came back from the challenge. It was like, oh, well, what do we do? It's like, oh, we like Donathan more. And there's already another Stephanie. I did feel like that in the second tribal council, like I felt like it was it didn't look great when it was the alliance of the power alliance was Brendan, Stephanie, Jenna, and Michael. Libby and Michael.
Yeah.
That was the five. Yeah. And then the people on the bottom, it was, you know, Donathan, James, Laurel, and who was the other person that's there? Now I look stupid. Jacob Derwin. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's like all the, like the misfits and people that did not fit in with, you know, the power five over there.
Who
did not like really like demonstrate themselves to be like the strategic like group of five in the game either.
I mean, not the best aesthetics either.
No that's what I'm saying. You know.
I figured, but
right so it's like you know, hey, we're a tight five. That is, you know, that James Lim, he couldn't swim in the challenge, so that's our group. But it would have been good. Yeah, Stephanie Gonzalez was robbed, and I like her line when she goes out. Sad.
Yeah,
because we all were.
Great final words.
Yeah, it was good.
I also I feel like at the time people were talking about the Stephanie Johnson boot episode as like a bad episode.
Yeah,
but I thought it was a really good one because they didn't try to hide the fact that like Malolo was going home. It was Michael, Jenna.
Yeah, it was Stephanie. It was polarizing where some people felt like it was it was boring, and then other people. I feel like Steven was a big defender at the time, but saying like he's like, no, that was like a really good episode to show you what it's like to be on Survivor.
Yeah, it was like everyone got like their case for why they should stay or like why they're a threat. It was like a murder mystery. It's like who's gonna die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which is like, yeah.
Okay, let's see. Then, Austin wants to know, is this the coolest name for a season of Survivor? If you knew nothing about Survivor, you just wanted to watch one, where does this season rank?
I mean, definitely above Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers. I think that's dead at the bottom.
Yeah, so it's interesting to sort of like look at them like it's like, all right, you have like the DVDs on the David Wright DVD shelf. Like, which one would you pull out if you didn't know what these two seasons were going to be about?
I mean, I think Edge of Extinction does sound pretty cool, even though it sounds like an Ice Age sequel.
Yeah, sounds cool.
Yeah, sounds cool. Ghost Island sounds cool. Sounds like a Scooby-Doo movie.
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like a choose-your-own-adventure book.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that would be a good choose-your-own-adventure book, too. I would buy that. Mm-hmm. Imagine a choose-your-own-adventure Survivor season book, where you're like a contestant on Survivor.
I mean,
and you're like...
Yeah. I feel like that Jeff Probst wrote those Stranded books, but I guess they weren't choose-your-own-adventures.
Mm, yeah, I didn't know Jeff Probst wrote those.
You didn't? Yeah, he was like really trying to make them a thing. At the time,
didn't try hard enough. Apparently,
not hard enough. Yeah, yeah. Ghost Island was a good name. Okay, yeah. This is from Profe. I'm surprised this season is so low. Can you identify one element that, had it gone differently, completely would have changed the perception of the season? I'm stumped on what that is. I mean, I think a lot of people pointed to the frustration with Laurel.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I don't know. I'm trying to think if there's just like one bad decision that this season made, you know, keeping with the theme. I think if the final 12 vote, where Libby goes home, if like Michael had been able to flip that on. See, it's tough to say, because like I think it would have been more exciting in the moment if Malolo had flipped. But then like the people on Malolo were not necessarily the best TV, because then you've got like Michael, Jenna, and Libby. Like, are they the final three now? Who knows?
Yeah.
I think it's a good season, and I think that like the thing that would have made it better is just having maybe like if Angela goes out instead of Morgan Rickey, I think then maybe it's a much better season.
Yeah.
I feel like then there'd be more of a power struggle within Navidi as we get closer to the end.
Perhaps
that's my answer.
Yeah. You know, everybody like looked at Laurel about, hey, you know, Laurel, why didn't you stop them? But the guys never turned on each other. And I do think that might have been like if Dominic and Wendell like had a little less trust in each other, like they both like looked at each other like, okay, you're my shield, I'm your shield. If you take me out, they're coming for you next. Had one of those two, like in this prisoner's dilemma, decided like, well, I got to make the first move. And everybody looks at Dominic about like, oh, why didn't you put Wendell into the fire making? But nobody ever says like, oh, well, you know, why didn't you take out Wendell at the final eight? You know, nobody looks at it like, and I guess they both knew that they had the idols, but I think that had that been part of the season where Dominic and Wendell actually don't trust each other that much and are both like looking at like, whoa, hold on, if I get Seabass and if I get Laurel, like I think that Laurel was probably looking at that also of like, all right, well, when are we making the move on Dominic, or when are we, you know, well, like, hey, like if anything, you know, if you want to take out Wendell, I'm just saying.
Yeah, if we're like seeing more of the plotting as it goes along, because it doesn't seem like they're really having conversations with anyone else about like making contingency plans for like, what if Dominic turns on me? You know, what am I going to do? I saw Yo Tom asked a question regarding the final six. Shouldn't Wendell target Tom? Wendell is immune, has an idol for final five and final four. And I think that is a valid question as well. Wendell definitely could have taken a shot at Dom at the final six, and I don't really know why he didn't.
So let's just think back. So he felt like, you know, Wendell still had his idol. I mean, do you feel like that Wendell just felt like, well, if I get to the end, I've got this? Do you think that that's what he was thinking?
I don't know. I mean, maybe he. Because like even if he thinks Dominic might play his idol at the final six, like Wendell has immunity that round, so he's not in danger. Maybe he just thinks like if Dominic is there at the final four, maybe Dominic will be targeted, like thrown into fire making instead of him, mm-hmm. if possible. But I feel like without Dominic, Wendell has a much better shot at immunity at the final four.
Yeah. If anything, maybe, you know, you want Dominic, if you're Wendell, I feel like that the optimal circumstances is for Dominic to play his idol. But maybe if you like have this airtight bond, like if Dominic wins immunity, well, Wendell still has his idol. Yeah, he won immunity and he still had an idol. So yeah. It doesn't hurt. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you ever thought about that.
Someone should send him a tweet right now.
I think he would just say, look, no, Dom was my guy. I'm not, even if he really was thinking about it, I think he would just tell us that, you know, Dom's my guy. I would never do something like that.
I feel like that was probably most of it. And I think that was the case with Laurel too. I can't say for sure, like if I was out on Survivor, that if I made a close friend that, you know, that I'd be able to stab them in the back.
Yeah.
Especially for, you know, like after, especially after Kellen like tries to get Laurel out or throws her two votes on her, it'd be really hard being like, yeah, I mean, I probably won't win either way, but do I want to go with this guy who's been like my friend all the way, or with this girl who just tried to get me out? Like,
and they had a brother sister relationship. Like, it would be like a terrible thing where it's like, okay, that, you know, if I can't win the game, like number one best case scenario is I win the game and then big drop off. But then the number two best case scenario is that the person who's my like closest friend, and this person that I have a very, you know, special bond with wins the season. Okay. So for her to like, I think she would have jumped had there been the perfect move. It never materialized. I'm pretty sure she was on board to vote out Dominic at the final six before the whole plan got
Angela.
Yeah. The whole plan got thrown away. And maybe if it's like, if it's Wendell and Laurel and Angela in the final three, you know, Wendell's still going to win the season, but is it 10-0?
Yeah. Yeah.
You think so?
I think so. Yeah.
That one person, Chris Noble, doesn't throw Laurel a vote.
I mean, maybe. I think Donathan might throw Laurel a vote in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Might be 10-0. Yeah, it might be.
But
I feel like that, you know, she's got a little bit more of a a little bit more of a chance. She's getting more votes than Angela.
Yeah, she definitely deserves more votes than Angela. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, I don't know if Angela was like trusted with top secret intel when she was in the military.
Probably not.
But I hope not.
I hope not.
I don't know if I think everyone would know about like all of the government's plans at this point if that was the case. But Angela seemed like a really sweet lady still. She killed that food eating challenge and was doing jumping jacks. Mm-hmm. Probably not the best fit for Survivor though.
So I feel like that the gross food challenge does not come up as often as it should, right?
Yeah, it's a classic. I mean, that's one of the things that the challenge really does right. They've always got like eating a lot of food. Although the challenge does show people like vomiting in slow motion. That's a big no-no for me. It's like you're living on an island. Like when people think of Survivor, I think one of the first things they think of is like, oh, these people are out there eating scorpions, eating rats. Mm-hmm. That was definitely my mom in the early days of me watching Survivor, refused to watch it because that was her impression of the show. It's just like, they just sit around and eat rats. Like, So I think you gotta keep that spirit alive.
Yeah. So they've only done it in the 30s. They did it. It was in Cambodia, right? It was in 31. Mm-hmm. And then I think they do it in 36. And I think we get two gross food challenges, that basically in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
We're due.
I forgot that it was even in this season.
We're due to bring it back.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe, is it like the auction? Like it's broken?
I don't think it's broken. I don't think it's broken. Yeah.
I mean, don't see what the big deal is.
And the time before that, I think, was in Karamoan. So no, it's like, every 3 years, we'll do the gross food challenge.
Yeah. Maybe it's just like a low supply of gross food.
I guess if you did it every season, there's like they're in Fiji, like they're sort of like, all right, well, like we don't have any new
gross food.
Yeah, also this was the only season where they did the like go and visit a place. Like again, they could just like go to the same place every single season.
Go to the same village.
Yeah. So like the being in one location does sort of like tie the production's hands on some of these things that are sort of like the Survivor traditions.
Yeah, because we used to get rewards too, where like, you know, Colby going to the Great Barrier Reef, things like that, where you're like seeing the local sites, local.
I think we've seen it all.
I think we've seen it all.
Yeah.
That's one of the downsides.
Yeah. One of the things I noticed in this, like now I've watched a lot of these like seasons from the 30s recently. Like I think there's like recurring locations that we go to for rewards. Like I think like we go to like one sort of like treehouse type place where we have a lot of rewards where it's sort of set up. I'm trying to see if I can like ID these like these sets that we go to for.
Well, we have the one where they had like they're wrestling for the ring in the water. Like that was the exact same beach as where like Michaela the Tatas are coming out today, like that challenge. They do a lot of repeat locations, but that's kind of like the fun of watching all these seasons in quick succession. I'd imagine is you're like, it's kind of like I Spy or like Where's Waldo, I guess is the better comparison.
Yeah,
like where's Island.
Also I feel like that like they've got like that big structure that we like I feel like some like famous things are happening up there on that like that big structure where like Chrissy was throwing up in the last season and then you know there are survivors are always climbing up this thing like they don't take that down like in between seasons.
Yeah, no, why would you?
Yeah. Yeah, they should really like, try to like brand that more, right? Like, what was the Nickelodeon show with Agro Crag? Like,
Agro Crag Guts.
Yeah. Shouldn't they like try to make that thing like, all right, here we are, Mount Paramount. Look at this thing. You'll be climbing up it.
Yeah, I think it should be like Clue, where each camp is just kind of like, you know, they have like a set area of each map. You're like, oh, meet me by Cochran's Well. And they're like given like historical names.
Yeah.
It gives a lot more like grand gravitas.
Yeah, I feel like it could be fun. Like I always said like that they could just have a Survivor Island, and certainly like there are some problems with being in Fiji continually, but I think that they should and I do think they tried to steer into it a little bit more with Ghost Island, but I think there's better ways that they could be going back into it.
Make it like a resort, you know, when people aren't filming, you're like, you want to go live on the island where they shoot Survivor?
Like even in Winners at War, when they would like they didn't treat like Edge of Extinction like you'll go back to the world famous Edge of Extinction, like I feel like that they could like hype it up a little bit of like send somebody to the Edge of Extinction for like and whoever goes to the like and whoever loses in this round is going to the Edge of Extinction.
Yeah. Sorry, I was too busy reading the comments.
It's a place. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a place.
What'd you say?
I saw Felipe said, "What's wrong with Angela?" Classic callback.
Yeah.
Dan Sineski asked, was Jeff happy that the tribes kept swapping to give Navidi the numbers? I mean, I can't imagine he was, right?
I don't think that he really is like looking for, you know, like some statistical anomaly to happen. I mean, at that point, what was it, 9-7 in terms of the numbers?
Ten to eight.
Yeah,
it was
10-8, and then we lost two more Malolos because of the second swap. So it would have been 9-6,
and then Morgan. So it was 8-6. So then we got. Or was it?
Well, it was just Morgan was the one they lost. Morgan,
yeah,
was,
Morgan
the one,
was the only one they lost.
Was
yeah,
the one
to six.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the first swap, I think it was a big mistake to swap after two votes because, like, what are you expecting? It was very statistically likely that it was going to be 5-4 on both tribes.
Yeah. So. What are you gonna do? Like, I think that maybe they're hoping like the catch lightning in a bottle with the second swap, but don't swap on day seven. It's too early in the season. Let us get a feel for things.
People like Cambodia too, but you know, Cambodia also swapped after like the, was it a 2-hour premiere in Cambodia?
It was I believe it was a 90-minute premiere followed by a second episode and then a swap. At least we got to spend like 2 weeks with the tribes, even though it happened on the same day in the game, where Game Changers is a 2-hour premiere and then also like a swap and then in the second episode.
Yeah, it never works for me.
No,
it's too soon. Then you're like, people are talking about original tribal lines and you barely even know who the people from the original tribe were. So,
and I understand why they do it. They want to keep it's like that. It's a gameplay. It's, you want to keep it fair, but you also have to remember, like, for television, and they think about for television on a lot of these things, but for the tribe swaps, it's just like everybody is confused.
Yeah.
It's too much.
Okay. What other questions we got?
We still have a bunch. Cassie says, did the split tribal officially ruin the season? I think if there's no split tribal, then Michael goes home at 10, and that opens up the possibility at 9 for the Navidi women to pull in Jenna and Donathan and make a move there. They don't even need Laurel.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a total missed opportunity to not have like a final 9 tribal whatsoever, like with 9 people actually there, because that's one of the classic pivot points in the game.
Yeah.
Odd numbers, baby.
Yeah. It kind of screwed up the Island of the Idols too, with the way that I mean, the Island of the Idols the Island of the Idols was already screwed up, but it did sort of like really like make it like more of a steamroll for the Tommy side of things, because they were able to knock out Missy and Aaron separately, and that would have been like a difficult thing for them to untangle. And so, yeah, I like the idea. Again, it's one of those things like, ooh, this is exciting, but like if they don't know it's coming, I don't know if it's better or worse to tell them, like, all right, and then just so you know, in the next round, we will do so think about, you know, what you want to do. I don't know. Like, I think you want the players on their toes, but, you know, it seems like another spot where, you know, they were able to knock out a big threat, Michael. And I guess he had a better chance at immunity because he only had to go up against 5 or 6 people. So on paper, you would think it might help him, but he didn't win it. And then that was it. You know, and you basically like separated him from his numbers, where he was kind of dead to rights at that tribal council.
Yeah, exactly. And we just had like all the big names of that one tribal, and then the other ones just like everyone else.
Yeah, that is interesting. If would Jenna have gone and flipped there, and you don't even need Laurel? You know, that is wild. The Dez move also.
Yeah. I think it also just like ties in with the thing you always say is like, when you go to 3 tribes, there's just a lot less room to maneuver when you only got, when you've only got like 5 people voting. It's much easier to just be like blocked out numbers wise.
Yeah.
And there's like nothing you can really do.
Yeah. I mean, when you have like 8 or 9 people, like there's lots of different ways it could go where the people are trying to split the votes. It's like, it's kind of a straight shot usually when it's 5 or 6 people voting. Mm-hmm. It's like basically like that's it. And you either have an idol or you don't. Like that's the only way to sort of like wiggle your way out of it.
It's a miracle that the Michael Tribal Council was as interesting as it was, where we got like a 2-2 to 1-1 vote.
Mm-hmm.
In most situations, I think that's just like 4-1 for Michael going home.
Yeah. And ultimately, like, not only was it like the missed opportunity for, you know, the women to potentially do their thing, but also it was like the fatal blow to Kellen and Laurel working together.
Yeah. Yeah. That episode pretty much killed any shot that anyone had of besting Dominic and Wendell.
Mm-hmm. And Kellen comes out of that tribal council like a new woman of like, we've got to get out Dom and Wendell. But it's too late.
Like,
Jordy is like,
first 3 opportunities you had.
Yeah. Okay. How about, let's see. What else? Nick Tadeo says, 4 out of the last 6 seasons have been rated very low. Is it because the older seasons are forgotten about, or is it because there's nostalgia for the older seasons, or because Survivor has legitimately gotten worse lately? We've touched on this a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think that Survivor has... I think that it has gotten worse in some departments. And I think that does like sort of contribute to why these are falling so low. Like, I think the abundance of twists, you know, throws a lot of unpredictability that doesn't really like, it's not organic. I think like the one thing that I've seen a lot of people touching on is that the storytelling in modern Survivor has gotten a bit messier.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was actually as much of an issue this season, because I feel like it's a very clear story of Dom and Wendell just controlling things, and, you know, writing that out and seeing everyone else like, should I flip? Should I not? They don't. I think the only real case we have of that in this season is where people are like talking about Chelsea, like she's a big threat. Do you think we should talk about Chelsea? Because
I'd like to just talk about what you're talking about right now about the storytelling. And I think that one of the things I've noticed in sort of like bouncing around through time is that the storytelling is there, but I feel like that, like, if you were a writer, like, I feel like the storytelling we get is storytelling through exposition, as opposed to, I feel like that in the early seasons of Survivor, we told the story of the survivors on the island. Like, and I feel like we're almost like trying to, like, in a Lost-centric way, or almost, like, we're watching Survivor and we're learning Kellen's story about life off the island. Like, it's not as much about like the 39 days that they spent on the island. It's almost like we're getting the story of what it's like for people in the real world. Like, we didn't get so much from like Suhawk, like, oh yeah, as a trucker, that every day I learned this lesson of driving the truck and I'm out there at 4 a.m. Like, it was, no, we learned Suhawk's story of what was her journey like over the course of 39 days. And we were seeing that story. And I feel like that resonated with us more. And some people, we do get that. We do get like their growth arc over the season. And we sort of like really resonate with that, with those characters. But I feel like that sometimes for the characters that are in the show, like we heard about Angela's military service, but like in terms of like her, what was her story on the island? And I feel like that they try to tell 18 or 20 stories about people, like who they are as people, as opposed to like what happened to them during this point in their life.
I think it's because like, just showing like some person telling about their life back home and like what life was like growing up, I think that's a much easier thing to, it's an easier like self-contain story for this person to just give like a 30-second confessional of like, here's my story, here's like about my military service. And I think like in the moment people connect with it. It's an easy way for casuals to be like, oh.
And it's like dramatic music.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, when I was growing up, I didn't know, you know, my dad got laid off from the factory and we didn't have a lot of money. And so I decided to become a personal trainer. And then, you know, I work with people every day trying to help them be their best version of themselves. And that's what I'm out here to do on the island. Like,
how does that relate at all?
It's just like sometimes like a few like random thoughts, yeah, about things, and there's dramatic music, and it's like, oh yeah, you feel something in the moment, but I just feel like it's fleeting. It's like I don't really remember it. In a few exceptional cases where somebody says something like truly memorable, but you know, it's like Chelsea, like to go to Chelsea. We kind of got that with her. They're drinking coffee. And she's like, you know, oh, like coffee, like this reminds me of being home and I love drinking coffee. And it's like, like, okay, but that was not like, but that wasn't her story. Like, it was just her like talking about like herself for a moment or two with dramatic music.
Yeah. I don't know if like this is a thing that production is maybe pushing on people more. Like you have to have it might be like people think they have to have this grand story about themselves to get cast.
I think it is like when people go through casting, like I do think that, and I do think that like the heart is in the right place from production. Like I think that where, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, like if you walked into Survivor casting offices like, hey, I'm here to be the biggest bitch you ever met, they're like, oh, you're great. Okay, like, all right. Like, get away. Okay, you're good. You're good. But now it's like, I think that they're not looking for to find like an Omarosa type character to put onto the, or a Johnny Fairplay, or somebody who's like going to be like a one note villain on the show, or like a one note character. They're looking for somebody. It's like, okay, they're like, but why do you want to be on Survivor? And it's like they're looking for like people that have like a reason of like why they're at a crossroads. Ooh, like, ooh, this person has an interesting story, but it doesn't always translate to them being like the most interesting people to watch on. Like, just because you're in a crossroads in your life doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be in like an interesting person to have on the show.
Yeah, it doesn't relate to their journey on Survivor. I think like the best stories on Survivor that like where someone's bringing in their outside life is when someone's like, you know, like as a gay person, as a minority, like I've always felt like an outcast, and like here I am on Survivor, overcoming like being an outcast on my tribe. You know, like that at least like translates.
Sure, but, like that's like you make the leap in sort of like and because you're telling that story that like it's you're telling that story of like but if your story is sort of like, you know, like I didn't have this when I was little, and then I went to this, you know, it's not always something that's like translates to what's happening in the game of Survivor.
Yeah, and I think even speaking about what you're talking about as far as villains go, I think the closest thing we have to like a villain character on this season is Chris Noble, and I think they only got that on accident. I think the main story with him was like about his grandma, right?
His mom,
right? Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So the that was it's. We've talked about this before, like forget like heroes versus villains. Like the modern Survivor wants to be, you know, heroes versus heroes. Everybody's a hero, and you know it can be interesting. You know, we got two like you know, great potential winners in Dominic and Wendell here in this season, and it works on some levels, but you know, there was a lot of other people that was just like we did not get to know them in this season. Like they did not have a story.
Yeah.
And 20 is a lot of people. 20 is too many people to be able to tell this story. So, all right, Will, let's go back to Chelsea.
Okay, Chelsea. So, what was I talking about there? Yeah, she loves coffee.
So
she's sitting. I don't, you know, not a big coffee guy. I think that...
Well, I thought she was a challenge beast. How is she... she's a challenge beast and I'm sitting.
She's sitting.
Like, imagine it'd be like if Sandra is such a beast in the challenges and also sits out of the challenges.
I think that Chelsea was really just like in a place in the game where there was no real reason to like give her screen time, because she was basically at the same in the same spot that Kellen was. I think they were both just kind of like riding the Naviti wave. And then they both realized they needed to go against Dom and Wendell at the same time. But Kellen just happened to be like the more dynamic speaker.
Yes.
So I think that's like...
They loved Kellen. They loved Kellen so much.
They loved Kellen so much. They always go to her and her gut.
Mm-hmm.
But I think like the main situations in Survivor history where someone has really been purple, other than like someone really pissing off production by quitting the game, is where someone is in like the exact same role in the story as someone else, but they don't tell the story as interestingly.
Yeah. And also Chelsea was probably bad at giving confessional also. Like, I think that if you have like, you know, basically like every single thing that happens on Survivor, you have every single person's perspective. And more often than not, you're going to go with like who gave you the most colorful like soundbite on it. And, you know, I probably like was on Survivor the Amazon probably benefited from that, where there probably were a lot lot of people that were, you know, not like really killing it in the confessionals.
I mean, they're trying to make a TV show. They're trying to tell a story. It does make it like more predictable having someone who's like not on the show at all, but would giving them a bunch of screen time while making it less predictable that like they're obviously not going to win, would it make it a better show? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. If they're not going to be as interesting to listen to.
Yeah. And I think that they do try to like, all right, well, let's go. This was at least we got a pulse from Chelsea on this one. Let's give this one to her. And then we'll go back to Wendell or Laurel or somebody like that for something else. But, you know, you had a lot of people that were big personalities to go to. And she just was a victim of that.
Yeah. And it's very top heavy, like you said. Like you had a bunch of really great speakers, and Dominic and Wendell. I think Dominic probably could have gone with some less screen time. I mean, he had a ton of confessionals going back to this season. Mm-hmm. But you know, the camera loved him.
But he's another.
He was always involved in everything,
yeah,
too.
So. Archetype of like that Survivor loves. Tell me, like on the scale of like Boston Rob to Tony, where mm-hmm. does Dominic fit in closer?
I think he's like, I mean, is Tony like the most, I'm not sure where we should say is like that far end of the scale. Is it like Joe Mena? Like Tony is somewhere between Boston Rob and Joe Mena.
I don't know. And is Russell on this scale of like, sort of like, very like, sort of like hard playing, like a tough guy. Like what is like what is the scale? Like what is the like? I guess is it like from Tony 1.0 to no? Okay, so here's the scale. Here's the scale. I'm gonna bridge this. Okay, that the top of the scale is Tony in Winners at War, and the bottom of the scale is Tony in Game Changers. Okay, and Tony in Kagiyan is like right in the middle, and then like you know, Joe Mena is like probably like on more on the side of like going towards Tony in Game Changers. Put War Dog in there. Boston Rob is like in between like Tony in Kagiyan and Tony in Winners at War.
Yeah. I think Dominic is probably I think he's probably pretty close to the middle. He's kind of like Boston Rob meets Tony. Mm-hmm. I would say.
Yeah, I do think like, that Boston Rob meets Tony is a good way to describe Dominic because he's not as much of like the control freak. Like Boston mm-hmm. Rob could have never worked with Wendell. Like that would that would not have been Boston Rob cut his Wendell at the final six in Redemption Island. Like Boston Rob, like probably the best comparison would have been, would Rob and Sean have gone to the end in Marquesas if that was the case? And I don't know, maybe Boston Rob 1.0 might have.
Yeah, I mean, very different Rob that we're talking about.
Yeah. You know, like he's been at that point where like he's like, hey, I got to get the win here in Redemption Island. Yeah, that would have been very interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
What other questions we got here?
OK, let's see. How about. This is an interesting one. Trevor, I don't know if we got into this the other night. If Dominic won, how would he have fared in Winners at War?
I think he would have been, a bigger target than, I mean, like Wendell wasn't really a target at all. I think Wendell really just gotten taken out by circumstance, like by being close to Jeremy. But
I think also Wendell like got into a bad spot because of mm-hmm. like that
swap.
At the swap, if like him and Nick and Yule voted out Michelle and Parvati and they come back mm-hmm. from the swap and it's like, oh, it took care of Michelle and Parvati. Like, I feel like it's a different story.
Yeah, very true. I think Dom would have been a higher profile target going into the season. And I could have seen him in like maybe the Winners at War feels like so long mm-hmm. ago now. I could have seen him in like the.
So he would not have like been on the same tribe as Boston Rob. So I feel like that. So basically, it's like an easy sub of like then he's on the Tony tribe with he's in Wendell's spot on that tribe. Is he like Wendell, the person who's going to end up going with Nick Wilson and Sophie and Yule? I don't really see him with that group, but I don't know. Is he going with Tony? Does he feel like, okay, I can hide behind Tony? And is sort of like with the Tony and Sarah group? Is he like hanging out with Tyson and Kim Spradlin?
I feel like Tony and Dom don't get along. I feel like they're going after each other.
They might be too similar. Just too similar.
I think they're like, there's this town ain't big enough for the two of us.
Yeah. That'd be a good question to ask him.
On the aggressive, like tough guy scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On the scale of Tony and Game Changers to Tony and Winners at War, where does he fall? Okay. Jeremy from Asheville says, does Dominic's game rank among the best losing games of all time? Well, let me ask you this question. Did Dominic in this season play the all-time best losing game?
See, I had a lot of issues with Dom's game going back to this season. Mm-hmm. I think especially near the beginning, there's a lot of unforced errors.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar to Tony and Kagayane.
It is.
He just comes out of the gate too hot. Yeah. He's like showing Chris his like fake idol, but it's like, I don't know like why he feels the need to do that. He's just like playing too hard.
Yeah. He's shot out of a can the beach on day one. And we didn't talk about this on Wednesday night too much, but it's like, he puts his foot in his mouth that says like, yeah, Jeff, I got to say, I'm a truth teller. What are we doing here with Chris?
Yeah. I feel like probably I would say Cerie's game in Micronesia. I don't think she really made any mistakes.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Like, I feel like that Cerie has like, you know, three of them that you could say. Like, do you go with Cerie in Panama?
Panama.
Cerie in Micronesia or Cerie in Game Changers?
Probably not Game Changers as much, but. Even still, like, it's in the conversation, I would say. Mm-hmm. I think Dominic just has like too many unforced errors where he's really like playing himself.
He played a great game. I think there's probably better losing games. Even though he did go take Wendell to the brink in that vote, there's probably a couple of better.
Is it the best losing finalist game? I think it might be.
Yeah. Probably. Who's the second best losing finalist?
Losing finalist. Probably Parvati in Heroes versus Villains. Might say Parvati in Heroes versus Villains is better than better than Dominic in Ghost Island.
Yeah, that's wild. Parvati 3.0, was that better than Dominic here? I think that Dominic's game here was better than like many of the people that actually won. I think that you could slot him like if he's like his losing game is probably like the 22nd best winning game.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he beats like Fabio. He beats we've been over this. I don't want to dog too much on
poor
the winners.
Poor Fabio. Yeah.
they've had enough.
Felipe says Robin All Stars is also better.
Oh yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, lost by one vote. Like I know that
the game with his wife. So like
yeah. So yeah, that's a good point. Mirror Shield also said that. So it's very very good. It's very very good.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's probably top three.
Okay. Brian Hickey says Chris Noble or Drew Christie. Who you got?
Oh, I think Drew Christie is like. Are we saying in terms of like playing again?
Who's bringing more entertainment value? I think I know the answer. It's not close.
I think it's Chris Noble.
Yeah, it's Chris Noble. Not close. Chris Noble. Drew Christie is just an idiot.
Yeah, he had like a few really good one-liners.
Yeah,
but like he just has no self-awareness at all.
Were we laughing with Drew Christie? Like Chris Noble? Like he rapped. Like Chris Noble is a star.
Yeah, Chris Noble is also like in on the joke to a very big extent. I think.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question, Will. Hold on. So Chris Noble's rap video. Unironically think this is awesome. This is a unironic great hit.
Oh.
Or does Chris Noble like sort of in the same way Coach like all the going back to the Dalton Ross behind the music. I'm not sure how much he was in on the joke. There's like some part of Chris Noble that was like, oh, this is people are gonna eat this up.
I think Chris Noble is in on the joke at that point. I mean, some of those bars he was spitting, mm-hmm. he had to have been. Mm-hmm. I think. I mean, what do you think about like his rapping in the confessional? Like, I do think he genuinely thought that was like, oh, I'm going to be like really cool here.
I don't know. I think he just thinks he's a good rapper.
Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah, mm-hmm. definitely.
Yeah.
What else says otherwise?
Yeah. All right. I'm trying to see if there's anything else. If the chat has anything else, we'll take some questions from the chat if they have anything.
I saw someone said Fishback is screaming right now. Yeah, I thought about Steven as like one of the best losing finalists, but
I mean, Steven,
he came really close.
He came close. He got there. Like they were a dynamic duo, but it was also a blowout.
Yeah, it was a blowout. I think they didn't have like as much competition as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Brian says, would the season be better if we didn't lose so many interesting characters early?
Yeah, I mean, Jacob lasting longer would have been interesting.
Yeah, that would have been fun to have him in his chaotic energy around. But
yeah, losing Brendan, I don't think we really mm-hmm. lost much in the way of entertainment value. Sorry, Brendan.
Yeah.
He seemed like a nice guy as well.
Okay. about this, Joe Williams says, can we get a Brant Steele Survivor Ghost Island with all ghost castaways? Casper, yeah. Sam Wheat, Shoeless Joe Jackson, Denny from Grey's Anatomy, the Snapchat ghost, the cast of Lost, etc.
I mean, who's like the It starts out really strong, but then like who's yeah. the fifth most famous ghost out there? Like the Headless Horseman.
Mm-hmm.
Is he even a ghost?
Ghost? I don't know. He's more of like a monster than a yeah. ghost.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Will, did you have any thoughts on Kevin Hart talking TKO?
I was like, man, the tie during this finale. Not even the best part of the finale. It's Kevin Hart yelling boob shot.
Yeah. Kevin Hart comes out with like big Jacob Derwin energy.
Yeah, for sure.
He's like, oh my God, I'm here. God. I can't wait. This is great. This is great. I just lost my shoes. I'm going to dump out the rice and put it all in my sock. Oh my God. I made a fake idol. This is Malolo's greatest tribe of all time. Got to watch TKO, everybody.
I would watch Kevin Hart on Survivor. That mm-hmm. would be a treat.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Wait, what? I forgot that like he was pitching TKO as like this wholesome, like, you know, those other shows are all like for the athletic people, but TKO, you know, we wanted this as like an obstacle course show that yeah. you on the couch could play. Like, is that really what they were thinking when they made TKO?
It's, I don't know like, who it was for. I think they were just trying to like play to the Survivor like, audience. Like, there's no like Suri like, of inspiring. TKO. Of like no, I got off the couch to go play TKO.
I got off the couch and then I like got hit by a bowling ball and then Kevin Hart like laughed at me. Like it's not some inspirational thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get what they were trying to sell there.
Yeah, it was like Wipeout meets American Gladiators with Kevin Hart. It was a lot going on.
Yeah. Okay. A lot of ingredients in that recipe.
Yes. Ben Tobb says, is Wendell's toothpick the coolest island accessory?
It's up there. I remember at the time it made me think like, man, I should just like go around with a toothpick in my mouth. Like maybe I'd yeah. look as cool as Wendell.
Like, I don't know. Like, should I get a toothpick? Would that be a cool accessory? I feel like I would poke the microphone and like stab myself in the face too much if I like podcast with a toothpick.
That's true. It's dangerous to like speak with a toothpick in your mouth. I
just impaled myself, everybody. I'm sorry. Oh my god. Am I bleeding? Am I bleeding? I think I have a splinter in my tongue. Yeah, I don't know if I could pull it off. But I know it's amazing. Like Wendell like is able to do like athletic competitions yeah. and not like throw like I feel like the toothpick would throw me off when you're like walking on like balance beams and like doing stuff. I feel like that would just be like one other thing to think about.
Imagine if you like trip and fall on your face. You could like choke on it.
Yikes.
Now I made myself think of that and it made me like really queasy.
Okay. All right. Well, Will, Ghost Island. This was a real treat to go back to. I have to be honest, I am I don't know how it's going to go back and watch Survivor Game Changers. I have not gone back. I have not thought a lot about Game Changers after. I feel like it's like a, obviously that, like the headline is like the, Varner and, Zeke incident of like, I can't imagine that plays any better on the rewatch.
Probably worse.
And also, like, I just feel like I remember the pre-merge is being like super exciting, but I just feel like that the post-merge is very like, but maybe I'll like have a better understanding of what's going on here in the post-merge of Game Changers next week.
I feel like it was a real blur, the post-merge. Like most seasons I can remember like the order people were voted out, but it's like some blob of like Ozzy, Debbie, Zeke, Andrea. It just felt
did
like.
Did Andrew go to Reddit right after Zeke? Was that it?
No.
I know. I couldn't do it. I couldn't
I don't
do
know.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
That's a Sporkle quiz in the making.
Yeah. That'll be interesting to figure out exactly.
Caleb played Survivor twice.
Yeah, he was back.
What's up with that?
He was back. You know, I do think that there's going to be some big thrills in the pre-merge, but yeah, the post-merge is going to be it's going to be wild. I don't know if anybody's ever gone back and watched Game Changers since then. Has anybody ever? I don't know. I've never heard anybody like, oh, I just finished binging Game Changers. Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm sure some people seem to really like
Officer Sarah,
it.
What a ride. Yeah. So
yeah, I've been one of the people that's been like complaining since like after Thailand. After Thailand showed up, I was like, all right, where's Game Changers? Bottom four.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
Yeah. And that, well, actually, like, somehow it has gone, like, very high into the rankings to the point where this was, like, the tabulator, Kurt Clark, let me know, Game Changers actually would have been 30th place, but we weighted the podcaster rankings just in case that there was any sort of like, I'm not sure the exact equation, but there was a fan vote. And then also there were podcaster rankings. And I guess the podcaster rankings knocked Game Changers down to 31st, where it would have been 30th.
Wow, that's news to me.
The fans actually voted it one spot higher.
That's, I mean, I've seen some people out there that are like, you know, this was a great season. Sarah played a great game.
No doubt she played a great game.
That doesn't mean it's a great season.
But, you know,
very disjointed.
I will have to say that I feel like that there is has been the biggest delta between, like, I was not really looking forward to going back to Ghost Island, and I really enjoyed it. So who knows?
Yeah. Well, it can't be worse than you remember.
Yeah,
probably.
But I think that also helps it. You know, going in with a low bar. So we'll see. With that, your bars are trash, and sometimes they're super low. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Because, you know, honestly, like with these like negative things, instead of dwelling on them for a week, it's just sort of like, well, that happened. All right, on to the next one.
Just move on very quickly. At least you don't have to have like a crisis podcast about it.
Yeah, it's a little.
Yeah.
You know, it's like your timeline. It's like, wait, what was that? It's like, oh, it's just more stuff coming. Yeah. And if somebody doesn't like bump the old episode back up to the top of the queue, like you know, you just sort of going on to the next one. All right, Will from America. So nice to get to catch up with you.
Yeah, always a pleasure to talk to you. It's been a while. It's probably been since the Song of the Summer, aside from like patrons.
Yes, but it's always so nice to you. I think that you are such a talented guy. How many years have I known you, Will?
I think that I first when did you called in. Yeah, I first like called into something during Ko Rong.
Yeah.
I believe. Yeah, it was Ko Rong because it was on the feedback show that you did with Jordan Parhar.
Yes,
and I think I like called in drunk.
yes, I remember one like very drunk.
Yeah.
Yes.
That happened. And you know, you've seen me grow up over the years.
I always say, like, Rob's podcast is like the high school, and I get to I get to watch people like graduate and leave, and they come back and they're like, you're still here, you're still you didn't retire. I thought you retired. Like, nope.
Yeah.
Nope. That's not the case.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what Julie Berry thought. Julie Berry thought when we had the 10-year anniversary party that I was retiring.
Oh, they're retiring from the podcast?
Yeah. It's like, retiring to do what? How old do you think I am?
Yeah. Like, where do you go from here?
Yeah, what am I going to do all day?
I don't know. Do you like cross stitching? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I did retire, I would retire from Rob has a podcast, like running Rob as a podcast, so that I could focus more on podcasting.
So podcasting about what exactly?
I don't know. We'll see. I gotta figure that out.
Brainstorm.
Work that out with Nicole. All right.
Time on Renap. One episode a day.
Yes, we're going daily. I'm retiring from RHAP to go daily on Renap. All right. WillFromAmerica.com. Let's check that out real quick.
Oh, no.
What's going on? WillFromAmerica.com. And you can go ahead and you can check out Will and his dog in a cornfield. Ooh, that's spooky.
Yeah. Very spooky. I mean, I said I'm the spookiest guy talking about the spookiest Survivor season.
Yes.
It was really a rough day, though. It was Halloween. My dog just really didn't understand the rules of a cornfield.
Yeah.
Like, you're not supposed to cut through the corn. But he just wanted to, like, go straight. But, yeah, you got to play by the rules.
Okay.
But I guess my dog would be no color.
Yes. Well, what's your dog's name?
Fluffers.
Fluffers. Okay.
Yeah.
What kind of dog is he?
He's like a mix of everything. We thought he was a border collie growing up, but he's actually like 25% cocker spaniel, 15% Shetland sheepdog. It's just like a whole soup.
Yeah.
Okay. Mixing pot.
All right. Good looking dog, Fluffers. There you go. all right. Check out WillFromAmerica.com and on social.
Yeah. At WillFromAmerica, certified 10 out of 10 Twitter handle by... Mm-hmm. By very credible sources.
Yeah. All right. Great job. All right. Will, thank you so much. Of course, if you're checking this out and like, oh, this was fun. All right. We do this every week. We're going to do our patron feedback show when I watch my 10th season of Survivor this week. We'll be 25% of the way there after this one. Of course, plenty of other fun patron podcasts in our exclusive patron podcast feed. Weekly patron activities, discount codes for RHAP merch, and more, all at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Thank you so much for watching, everybody. Take care. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.
Be nice to Bradley.
Be nice to Bradley.
Don't act like children.
Don't act like children.
Don't say he's got a punchable face for that he's a villain.
Not even one of the greatest villains of all time.
He keeps complaining.
Support for this podcast comes from our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do, and it's hard work, but you know what's easy? Bundling with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance, and it's a good thing, too, because you're busy enough. Go to geico.com, get the quote, see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today.